This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm David Gale and welcome to The Informer. Tonight I'm joined by James Houghton. On tonight's Informer we have Rodney Croom from Just Equal. We're going to talk about gay men donating blood and the ban that's in place. We'll also touch on the mood in the Senate last week when the plebiscite bill was voted down. Then we'll be joined by Dr. George Kotsiou from the Red Cross Blood Supply to hear about maintaining a safe blood supply. The Victorian government wants a ban on gay men donating blood reviewed on the grounds it's discriminatory. Under the existing rules, men who have had sex with men in the preceding 12 months are banned from donating blood. The Australian Red Cross Blood Service says the deferral period could be safely reduced to 6 months, but the Therapeutic Goods Administration is opposed to any change. A review is scheduled for 2018, but the Health Minister Jill Hennessy wants that brought forward by 12 months. Activist and Just Equal spokesperson and longtime advocate against the ban, Rodney Croom joins us tonight on The Informer. Welcome, Rodney.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on The Informer, as always. Before we look at blood donations, can we talk about the decision by the Senate last week not to proceed with the plebiscite? You were there in Canberra to see this bill voted down, weren't you?
Yes, I was. And, of course, it was a great relief.
Yeah, sort of not leaving anything to chance.
Yes, I think a lot of people assumed that when the Labor Party came out against the plebiscite, that was it. But the numbers were still quite close. And so I was in Canberra to make sure, to do all I could, to make sure that the final vote went against the plebiscite, which it did by a margin, I think, from memory of 4 votes.
And with one abstention as well.
Yes, one abstention, a critical one, of course.
Yeah.
That was Senator Dean Smith, a Liberal from Western Australia, who, on the basis of his Liberal principles, opposes a plebiscite. I think a lot of LGBT Australians and our friends and family members were very relieved that evening when that plebiscite was finally knocked on the head.
Interesting that Senator Smith did abstain. It almost sort of makes us feel that a free vote might be possible, you know, when a Liberal senator, I suppose he's got nothing to lose, but a Liberal senator is able to just sort of go, I'm not going to vote. But, like, where do we go to from here?
Well, that's a good segue to the possibility of a free vote. And Senator Smith has actually publicly said there should be a free vote in the last week or so. There will be some people in the government who say that it's a plebiscite or nothing, that there won't be a free vote in Parliament, and that the only route to marriage equality is through a public vote.
Yeah.
I don't believe that at all. I think there's quite a possibility that the Liberal Party at least that this issue will return to the Liberal Party room and that there will be a discussion about a free vote and the possibility that a free vote will be granted. There's more support for a free vote in the Liberal Party room than I think the government is giving the impression that there is. And even if a free vote isn't allowed, say in the first half of next year, there's still the possibility of getting marriage equality through in this term with members, Liberals, crossing the floor.
Yeah.
Remember that the numbers are very close and we only need 3 Liberals, I think, in the lower house to cross the floor, 3 backbenchers. And backbenchers in the Liberal Party, according to the party rules, should be able to do that with impunity. We only need 3 to cross the floor, and it will be through the House of Representatives, about the same number in the Senate. So this is quite achievable, I believe, in 2017. We don't have to wait till the next election or to a plebiscite, as some people would have us believe.
And, of course, Just Equal will keep the pressure up. I suppose it starves the government of oxygen. It creates this impression that the government isn't under control. Just, you know, like the talk about 18C and other sort of issues that just won't go away, it keeps that impression happening. And I think they're pretty concerned about, you know, changing the impression of what the sitting government is doing. Now, if people want to make a donation or send a message to politicians, they can pledge their support through Just Equal, can't they?
they can. I think the most effective people can do now, right now, is help with a donation. We're putting together our next campaign. And when I say we, it's not just Equal, it's also the other groups that I've been working with, like PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, Rainbow Families and others. The national spokesperson for PFLAG, Shelley Argent, and her husband, Don, spent over $200,000 of their own money on research and polling and lobbying and all the things that were so important, so crucial to stopping a plebiscite.
Yeah.
And they've set up a GoFundMe fundraising campaign. You can easily Google it. Just put in Shelley Argent, help Shelley Argent make it law. At GoFundMe and make a donation there. I think almost $5,000 has been raised so far, but we've got an ambitious target of $50,000 to put the next stage of the campaign into place, and that is to next stage is to put pressure, friendly pressure, on those Liberals who currently support marriage equality to do more to achieve a free vote in their party, or to please the cross the floor if there isn't a free vote. We'll be working as hard as we can in particular electorates to encourage those Liberals to move in that direction. And we'll also be encouraging those Labor members who have yet to declare their support for marriage equality, particularly there's about half a dozen senators who have yet to say they support it. We'll be encouraging them to come out in favour, because that'll make it easier to get it through the Senate. So we have some pretty clear campaign objective there, I think, and Shelley will be leading that. PFLAG will be leading that, along with Just Equal and other groups.
So, well, what we'll do is put a link with our podcast so that people can go through to Shelley's page and also to justequal.org. Now, Rodney, look, what we really want to talk about tonight is that, I mean, you're no stranger to the ban on gay blood donations. This is gay men primarily, which we might come back to your experience before in the past. But firstly, would you like to explain how blood services discriminate against a sector of our community by not accepting their blood?
If you go into an Australian Red Cross blood donation centre, or blood collection centre, there's a number of steps you go through before you're actually able to give blood. It's a screening process. And part of that screening process is that you fill out a written form, and one of the questions on the form is whether, if you're a man, you've had sex with another man in the last 12 months.
In fact, if you've had oral or anal sex with another man, even safer sex using a condom, if you're a man, is what it states, actually.
Well, the form doesn't distinguish. It's just any form of sexual contact between men means if you're a man and you've had sex with another man, then you can't give blood. You have to wait 12 months from the last sexual contact you've had if you want to give blood. So you have to abstain from sex before that 12-month, if you're a gay man, before that 12-month period, if you want the opportunity to give blood. So that's the current situation. In some other countries, it's worse than that. In the United States, from memory, you are deferred from, you're banned from giving blood for life.
Yeah, it's a lifetime ban.
Another man, just once, if you've had sex with another man, that's it. For your whole life, you can't give blood. And these are policies that were put in place in the early to mid-80s, at the time when HIV was much less well understood than it is today, HIV transmission and prevention. I believe it really is time that we reviewed those policies. My involvement in this issue is that I was a support person and a researcher in an anti-discrimination case in Tasmania involving a young gay man, Michael Kane, who didn't realise that he was deferred from blood donation and went in to give blood at the blood collection centre in Launceston, and was outraged that he couldn't give blood. It seemed so unfair, and he took an anti-discrimination case. So my familiarity with the science and the ethics of the situation come from my involvement in that case. And the more I was involved, the more research I did for that case, the more epidemiologists that I spoke to, the clearer it became to me that the current screening process is framed completely wrongly. The issue is not the gender of our sexual partner. That's not the factor which creates risk. Risk of HIV transmission depends on the risk associated with your sexual activity.
Yeah, so it's like more to do with risky sexual practices rather than... Yeah, I see what you mean.
The gender of the person you have sex with is not relevant. What's relevant is how risky your sexual activity is. And it became clear during that case from the evidence given by epidemiologists from around the world that there are plenty of heterosexual people in Australia right now who are able to give blood, no questions asked, who are far greater risk of contracting and passing on HIV into the blood supply than a whole swathe of gay and bisexual men. There are gay and bisexual men whose sexual activity is much safer, whose blood is much safer than the blood of people who currently donate. The reason I'm talking about this is because sometimes we frame the issue wrongly. Like I said before, it's not about discrimination necessarily. Sure, the fact that gay men can't give blood does stigmatise us as a threat to public health. But that's not the primary issue. The primary issue is that if we allow gay bisexual men whose blood is safe to donate, then there's more safe blood available to save lives. That's the bottom line. If this policy was framed differently so that it actually looked at sexual risk rather than gender of sexual partner, not only would it be less discriminatory, but there would be more safe blood available for those Australians in need. So really it's a win-win situation. I don't understand why the authorities maintain the current policy.
Yeah, look, it is a little bit unusual. There is hopefully a review that will come up in 2017. As we say, Jill Hennessy, our health minister here in Victoria, she's been a proponent to try and get that brought forward from 2018. We're going to talk to the Red Cross blood supply. Look, it's great having you on The Informer once again, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future. Thank you, Rodney.
Thanks again for having me on.
Okay, on the line, we're joined by Dr. George Kotsiou, National Donor and Product Safety Specialist from the Red Cross Blood Services. It's a bit of a mouthful. George, welcome to the Informer.
Yeah, good afternoon, David. Thank you for having me on.
Look, we've just been talking about the ban that's on gay males, sexually active gay males donating blood. Just briefly, what are your responsibilities at the Red Cross Blood Services?
Let me just start by saying that the issue seen from our eyes is primarily one of blood safety.
Yeah.
So Australia has one of the safest blood supplies in the world. And if someone contracts a disease from an infection from blood that's borne by the recipient entirely, so we take the priority of keeping the blood supply as our foremost task. And that the evidence behind that is what guides us in our selection of our policies.
Right. Well, you know, there's going to be a review, possibly brought forward to 2017. And I know previously it's been suggested that the ban on people who have had risky sexual behaviour be brought from 12 months down to a 6-month ban. What difference would that make?
Look, we welcome the review. As I said, we try and base our policies on evidence, and any time there's a chance to review the evidence and update the policy, that's a welcome change for us, and we are very keen to participate with stakeholders and make sure we get the best outcome. So there's no problem with having a review. We did, the blood service did put forward a proposal to reduce the deferral period from 12 months to 6 months. Unfortunately, the proposal was rejected by our regulator.
The Therapeutic Goods.
The TGA, Therapeutic Goods Administration. And I guess they have a difficult job to do, and we have to respect their view, their decision as a regulator. But we felt the case had merit, and we would be very keen to re-examine all the evidence again and see whether we can put up a better case, or indeed look at this issue from another angle to see if we can get a solution that preserves the safety of the blood supply but improves equity of access to all those people who want to donate blood and can't.
Yeah, look, I'm one of those people. I donated blood in my earlier years up until the mid-80s when I wasn't able to donate blood anymore. And in fact, in 2000, Australia was the first country in the world to reduce restrictions on blood donations for men who have sex with men from 5 years to 12. So we're world-leading then. But currently, you know, countries such as Spain, Portugal, Mexico and Russia, Argentina, Chile, South Korea, they have no deferral periods. Why would it be different there?
Okay. I think this is, you raise a very good question. When one designs policy, you need to design policy based on the prevalence, the amount of people who have a particular infection, and more particularly the amount of people who contract new infections in your own environment, in Australia. So the epidemics in Western Europe in particular are quite different in the epidemic in HIV and how they're made up and who contracts the infection. So when we construct our policy, we do so on the basis of Australian evidence. And unfortunately in Australia, it's still the case that 90% of new infections with HIV, or up to 90%, occur in those individuals who have male-to-male sex as a risk factor. So essentially that underlines the policy to take recent sexual activity between men as the as a disqualifier for blood donation in the short term.
Look, I've noticed that the Red Cross blood supply is quite stringent in their questions, you know, such as visits to England, you know, during that mad cow disease period. There's certainly to do with having sex practices with sex workers, whether you are a sex worker or whether you've had sex with a sex worker. Don't you think that maybe that type of screening is possibly the way to go? I mean, look, I don't feel discriminated against, but, you know, there are certain people within our sectors that might feel a bit discriminated against because a whole sector is actually cutting everybody out.
Yeah, look, I entirely understand why people find it disappointing that they're unable to donate blood. And I can understand why some people might get angry with such a decision. We have up to 300 deferrals, and the deferrals are for many different things, but they're all based around a perceived danger or risk of transmission of infection or other problems with the blood supply. So, as I said before, we must focus on preserving the safety of blood supply in Australia. And because the recipient doesn't get a choice about the blood and bears any cost in terms of infection or side effects from the blood. So we are open to look at safer ways, or more inclusive ways of providing safe blood, but the bottom line has always got to be that we maintain Australia's very enviable record of blood safety.
Yeah, look, you know, I've received blood as well in operations after an accident. So, you know, I'm glad that those regulations are certainly there in place. Just out of interest, you know, because I have looked at the questions on the questionnaire for donating blood. What would happen if I was a trans man or a trans woman who had had sex with a man? That's actually not included on there. What's the deal with blood donations there?
Okay, that's a very good question, David. It's actually... without wishing to not answer your question, it's actually currently under review in the blood service. We are very eager to look at the place of transgender persons and really move the blood service into a more modern situation with tackling transgender men and transgender women.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, there is We deal with transgender people on the basis of their perceived identified sex or gender. And if a transgender male has sex with a male, they're treated much in the same way as another man who has sex with a man,
okay,
for example.
You know, we certainly look forward to hopefully that Health Council review being brought forward to next year. We'll keep certainly our listeners on The Informer updated about that. It's been great talking to you. I also want to mention that those people that are eligible to donate blood, I always urge everybody that can to certainly donate blood, because the blood bank really works on low supplies and encourages everybody, certainly during holiday periods, to go in and donate blood. So I think that's the sort of message you'd certainly want to hear out there, that if anybody wants to donate blood and they are eligible, to please do so.
Yeah, thank you, David, for that vote of confidence. There are almost 9 million people thought to be eligible to donate blood, and very few, or only a small proportion, do. So we always encourage eligible people to get out there and roll their sleeves up and give us some blood.
Okay, thank you very much for talking with us on The Informer. Thank you, George. Okay, we'd like to thank our guests, certainly Rodney Croom from Tasmania, talking about the blood issue tonight, and also from Dr. George Kotsu from the Red Cross Blood Services. Coming up next, of course, will be Worldwide Wave, and they're going to be exploring all around the world tonight. They've got a certain issue, so make sure you stay tuned to that. The Informer will be with you again tomorrow night at 6:30. Thank you. I'm David Gale.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.